court will proceed to the second case of the day, Florek versus the Village of Mundelein. Mr. DeSanto?
I hate to start an argument by falling on my sword, but if you looked on page 24 of my brief, I write that this case has already been cited, standing for the proposition as to what a serious medical need can be found by a person's claim for an aspirin in an ambulance. And I don't know how it happened, but I didn't realize that I didn't put the case that I cited until yesterday morning. That case is Smith versus Hart, 2010, Westlaw 384-4374. And I apologize to counsel and to the court for that. But this case is really about, or what it hinges on, is the ruling on a motion for summary judgment which denied the plaintiff detainee baby aspirins. She was a known heart patient, was acknowledged by the court in her recitation of the facts that the defendants, the police officers, were aware of her prior heart condition.
Well, she said she had a heart condition. That's the way they were aware of it.
That's right. And that, I think, is one of the criteria under the four factors test to determine whether this was objectively reasonable conduct, and that would be notice. I think you can give notice by either the observation, and they did observe her having trouble breathing, and a notice by what she says. And she said she's a heart patient. She contended, in fact, the court made note of the fact that she contended that she was having a heart attack, and she told the police officer she was having a heart attack. She requested baby aspirins, and the court ruled that there was no analogous case or there was no way that we could establish that she was entitled to baby aspirins, and felt that police interests were more in favor than her need for aspirins. And the ruling on police interests, which I think is really the crux of this, I think we have to weigh what police interests are versus what a detainee's right to prompt medical treatment is. And the prompt medical treatment in this case hinges upon whether she should have been given baby aspirins or aspirins to chew.
But in terms of the officer, leaving aside the village, the officer, the evidence seems to be, was under strict instruction by policy not to allow at least non-prescription medications to be given, correct?
Correct.
So doesn't that mean that he acted consistent with the policy of the village and really didn't have any particular discretion with respect to allowing her to have the aspirin?
That's correct as well.
And, so,
and I find that that's problematic because this is a situation where the policy itself, which on its face is not unconstitutional, as you would find in Monell, this policy says when somebody's in jail and they're in custody, you don't give them medication without a prescription, and that includes over-the-counter medication.
But I want to just be sure, Counselor, you're not claiming that there was any error in finding qualified immunity by the officers because the officer followed the policy of the village?
No, I'm claiming that there was error because she granted the motion for summary judgment as to that issue, and that issue gave them immunity from not giving the aspirins.
I guess I'm having trouble with that. If he was following a clear policy that you don't allow non-prescription medications, and I'm not aware of any United States Supreme Court, then a police officer on the beat would have known that that was an unconstitutional policy, why he wouldn't be entitled to qualified immunity.
Because the issue is not so much aspirin. I think the issue is prompt medical attention. And this is a perfect storm situation.
Okay, so you're claiming the overall circumstances required him to do more, but I'm focusing on the aspirin. Was he not required to follow the policy as to non-prescription medications?
And that's what brings us to a Monell problem. He was required by the
right,
policy.
Right, so, so right. Now, as to the village, one can understand why they might want a policy requiring their officers not to allow the taking of non-prescription medication because they don't know what it is. In other words, it's non-prescription. It could be that this individual is asking for what they claim are aspirin, and they may be something else.
That's what their argument was, and you kind of have to balance that. I mean, how many people would you expect put in their Bayer aspirin bottle at their home when they are a heart patient, and you something that's not Bayer aspirin, and you compare that with the need to take an aspirin? I mean, you have to balance this now, and to say that it's good to have officers having clear direction and no discretion, that's a good thing. But it's also a dangerous thing if you're going to deprive people who need aspirins that are about to have a heart attack, as this lady did. And
so you're not really attacking the policy. You're saying that the officer should have recognized that this case was an exception?
Oh, sure. Sure. It's common sense.
That's certainly novel. Then.
Well, no, it's not novel. And it would have been did you see the way this snowballed from the motion for summary judgment? That's where the expert police witness comes in. Police officers have training. They know more than you or I. I'm assuming you're not a police officer. But they would know under these circumstances that there's a lady in distress, and they have a duty, since she's a detainee, to be objectively reasonable.
Once this issue was decided against you on summary judgment, there was no reason to admit the expert's testimony at trial.
That's why I have to approach the summary judgment, because after the summary judgment, the court's ruling was, well, the expert's not relevant anymore, because I've already ruled. I've made that determination that baby aspirins, compared to police interests win. And that doesn't make any common sense.
Well, I think what she said was that there was qualified immunity because this was not a clearly unconstitutional or objectively unreasonable.
But the end result is what we're both saying. Whether it's qualified immunity on the police officer's part or an error, I know I'm not expressing myself well.
Qualified immunity just means a mistake in judgment, right? And that was what the summary judgment ruling rested on. The court, as I understand it, didn't make an affirmative ruling one way or another on the constitutionality of what the officer did. She said he was entitled to qualified immunity for it.
She relied on two things. I think she relied on the order 0305, and she relied on the argument that Judge Conley makes on the what could be in the baby aspirin. I mean, the defense used that pretty cogently at the hearing. I just think that when you weigh how many times you're going to run into somebody who puts something else in their baby aspirin bottle versus the need of a person who's having a heart attack.
But this is a narcotics arrest.
Pardon?
This is a narcotics arrest.
This is at most 10 grams of smoking marijuana, for which she got a $100 fine and 6 months supervision. This is not a drug dealer.
Although the concern was that the son was.
Pardon?
The concern was that the son was a drug dealer.
Right.
In the same household, which is why they got the warrant.
They got the warrant because the son's friend was in either the house or in the vicinity of the house, and in two occasions sold $80 worth of marijuana. And, you know, and I can't say that my client's a nun either. She got caught smoking marijuana.
And throwing a bag underneath the couch.
And she acknowledged that as soon as they came in. And she paid her penalty for it. But, you know, she paid a bigger penalty because of what happened by the failure to provide medical attention.
And I guess what I'm struggling with is, that are we here because of the net result, as opposed to because they made an error in judgment at the time they refused to let her have the aspirin? In other words, the officer's testimony was that maybe at one point one officer conceded short of breath, but certainly that they didn't believe she was having a heart attack. Other symptoms weren't there that they could see.
Well, I would hope they didn't believe that, because if they did believe it, then that's almost criminal. But they should have believed it. It's what they did or what they should have done, I think, would be the standard, because you have to look at what's objectively reasonable under a Fourth Amendment case. I see that my light is on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sano. Mr. Smolens?
May it please the Court, Mark Smolens for the defendants' appellees. let me go off my script and address a couple of quick points. This lady didn't need baby aspirin. She needed medical attention. And in Mundelein, the department doesn't want police officers rendering medical attention. She asked for aspirin. He said, ma'am, I can't let you take any baby aspirin. Do you want me to call you the paramedics? And the record reflects what her response was. She wasn't in distress. She says she was. The officer said she wasn't. And that's why the failure to provide medical attention claim went to the jury. But you have to keep in mind that when the paramedics got to the Sallyport, after she'd been taken into custody, 2 minutes after she started having, claiming she was having chest pains, they didn't immediately throw her in the back of the ambulance and rush her to the hospital. They spent 20 minutes there in the Sallyport examining her. They attached her to the heart monitor. She had a normal sinus rhythm. She was able to slow her breathing down when they were telling her to calm down. And that's what occurred while they were there in the apartment. Mr. DeSanto would have had the jury believe that she said, oh, I'm a heart patient, I'm having chest pains, I'm having a heart attack, I need baby aspirin. The jury didn't believe that testimony because that's not what happened.
Well, the jury wasn't told about the baby aspirin, correct?
Sure they were. They were told that she wasn't permitted to take
the aspirin.
Okay. The jury heard that to put that assertion in context. They were not given the opportunity to decide whether or not giving this lady baby aspirin was a violation of her constitutional rights because it wasn't a violation of clearly established law to refute that. And that's why he wanted to have these experts come in, to get that issue back in front of the jury, because it would have been easy for the jury to say, this is a nice old lady. My gosh, all you had to do was to give her some baby aspirin. You officers created the problem this lady had, and that's similar to the kinds of things that we see in the excessive force cases. Police officers perform a particular type of activity, and the plaintiff says, and it was because of what the officers did that caused the need for them to use force. And this court has said, no. What you have to do is you have to look at objectively what these officers did. Counsel tells you that it's unusual for people to have something other than baby aspirin in a bottle containing baby aspirin. And as Your Honor pointed out, we're executing a search warrant for the sale of contraband in a residence. But if you walk up the street to my vehicle, parked in a garage up on Lake Street, and look in my golf bag, you'll find a little bottle that says ibuprofen. And in it, you'll find Paraffin Forte, Celebrex, and probably a couple of the Vicodins that I had left over when I hurt my neck last year, because I keep it all in that one little bottle. But nobody else would know that until today when I tell you that. The same is true with respect to the bottle of baby aspirin that was in Linda Florek's house. Now, counsel didn't address the knock-and-announce claim, although it's in his brief, asserting that the court erred by granting summary judgment on the knock-and-announce claim. The plaintiff testified that she heard no warnings. She heard four loud impacts on her door. We're talking 10:30 at night, and she had no idea that the police were there to execute a search warrant. The jury had the opportunity to hear that testimony and to weigh its credibility. She admitted that the first words out of her mouth when she saw the officers come in were, oh no, not again. And what was the jury supposed to think about that? What did she mean? That some burglars or home invaders had come back? No, that's not what she meant. She meant that it was the police executing another search warrant just like they did on her previous residence in Mundelein 10 years earlier when her older son, David, was selling drugs out of the house. Keep in mind, Your Honors, it was counsel for the plaintiff that kept the jury from hearing the evidence of the similarities between these two police events. And the only reason the jury got to hear my one question that Judge Valdez allowed me to ask, isn't it true that officers executed a search warrant in your house back in 1995, well, yes, is because at trial, on direct examination, she tried to say that nothing like this had ever happened to me before. And even Judge Valdez, she said that the evidence I wanted to put in would have been too prejudicial, wouldn't let her lie to this jury. We also know that she knew that it was the police. And we know that because of what she did. If someone is breaking into your house at 10:30 at night, the first thing you do is not to stash the dope that you were smoking on your couch watching the evening news. The first thing you do is either to get your son up or get to the phone and call 911 because people are breaking into our house, Jason. She didn't do that. And any assertion that this lady was distressed or frightened by the conduct of my clients was absurd and properly rejected by the jury in this case. Your Honors, based upon the briefs that are before the court on behalf of the defendants, I would ask that the judgment below be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Smolin. Mr. DeSanto?
Thank you. I'm not sure what appeal we're arguing. We are not arguing anything that happened at the trial. He had the trial the way he wanted that trial structured. And if you search in this record, you won't find anything he was talking about. In fact, I would disagree factually as to quite a bit of what he said. But that's not before the court. That's not the basis of this appeal. What this appeal is relates to the snowball that was on the top of the hill, and everything falls from that snowball. And that snowball was the granting of the motion for summary judgment as to the aspirants. With that being granted, then it became irrelevant for us to be putting in other the stuff about, in fact, she wouldn't let police expert Waller testify because of that motion. But Waller had more to say than just aspirins. He would have talked about the nature of the break in the door.
Is that the only issue with respect? I don't mean to cast it one way or the other. I shouldn't say only, but the principal issue is the exclusion of Waller with respect to the original entry. Your
right.
principal claim
right.
is that Waller should have been allowed to testify that
Correct.
The practice of the police and how they came to the door, and even if we assume they gave warrant, they announced and waited 15 seconds, that was inappropriate under these circumstances.
Correct. And Waller went by way of the aspirin, and that's the way the trial went. So we're not before you to argue what the jury did or didn't do.
But you're saying that
the trial was a good trial.
The
result was bad.
You're saying that Judge Valdez didn't. How did she rule as to his testimony with respect to the entry? I thought she had ruled he wasn't going to be allowed to testify as to that issue either.
She ruled that would be susceptible to a layperson as to whether or not that would be.
What was reasonable within the eyes of the person who's facing the break-in, which is exactly what the jury is being asked to decide, isn't it?
Right, but I think they're entitled to have guidance, and that's what 702 tells us about our rules of evidence. To be a police officer, you have to be trained. There must be something you have to learn to be a police officer. And I don't know if those eight people in that jury knew what you're supposed to do when you do a break-in. But my expert did. And the only people they heard from were the police officers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sandoz. Thank you, Mr. Smolin. The case is taken under advisement.